It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays here 12 to 2 on WSB. Our number, as always, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Happy to pick up the cost of that call. You can find me online at thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Check out what we're doing on the Equifax Finance blog. We've got our video contest going. If you haven't entered your video yet, you are missing out on the chance to win fabulous prizes, but also to make a bigger difference in how we learn how to manage our money. So, Equifax.com, click on the finance blog, or you can just go to thinklink.com and click it on there. And it will take you right to the page where you can enter the contest, and we hope you will. So we are five weeks and 2 days away from the presidential election, which I think is probably of somewhat of a concern to people. I know it is. I'm concerned about it. But no matter who you, and we've got the big debate this week, right? This is the beginning. There are three debates in October. I think it's one every week. Anyway, there's one this week. I know there's one on the 16th, and then I'm not sure which of the weeks is the third. And then there's a vice presidential election debate as well. The thing that I don't know if we're going to really understand is what either candidate can do about the fiscal cliff. And I'm going to talk in a moment about the fiscal cliff and why I have said since the beginning of the year that this is going to be the pivot point on whether we fall into recession. My feeling, having been to a dinner party last night and had more conversations about the fiscal cliff and the world economy, is that recession is coming. I've been feeling like we've been on a knife's edge now for a long period of time. And this, I think, this 2012 year that we're in, that we're starting to get to the closing part here in the fourth quarter, we're going to think that this is the worst year since the recession. For a non-recession, this is a bad year. And we are moving backwards. The numbers are showing that we're slowing. There was a 13-point-something% decline in manufacturing in 1 month. There's just a slowdown that's happening. And so recession is coming. And I've been saying this to you, but I can tell from your emails that some of you aren't listening. To you, it's 2007, and everyone is buying stuff. You go, oh, housing prices are up. Jewelry. Coach bags. I was at a department store yesterday watching people scoop up like Coach bags, like they were going out of style, like they were never going to be made again. Cars. It's like when that Lexus dealer called the show in October of 2007 and insisted he had never had a better month. Of course not. We are 5+ weeks away from the election. Real estate activity has dropped off considerably, and it always does in the months before an election, right? Nobody wants to buy homes now. Nobody wants to make a big mistake. Nobody wants to be the one who is the last one off the sinking ship, so you're just not going to get on. Doesn't matter that mortgage interest rates are at historic lows and that property prices, by and large, are still a third below where they were at the height, and in some markets like Georgia, right, 50, 60, 70% below. You see, oh, home prices are moving up, finally, nationally. Well, it's not because of middle-priced homes or upper-priced homes. This is only about homes going for $20,000. Eventually, you're going to run out of homes for sale at $20,000, and then people will pay $25,000 or $30,000. And what's happening here is that the fear factor is ginning up the game, and you're starting to imagine life after the election. But I think you're missing the big picture. because in my mind, it doesn't matter who wins this election. Yes, it matters for a whole bunch of social issues. But when it comes to the economy, neither President Obama nor Governor Romney have enough support in Congress to get done what needs to be done. And that's where it's all about the fiscal cliff. You keep hearing about the fiscal cliff, right? But the truth of the matter is, if Congress doesn't deal with this, and even if they do, we're going to head into recession. I don't see any way around it. But it could be a really deep, bad recession like we've just had, or it could be a milder recession. And the only way we avoid this is taking on more debt, which just seems to be completely unpalatable in today's world. So what is the fiscal cliff, right? This is the conundrum that we face when the Budget Control Act of 2011 goes into effect. So at the end of the year, we're supposed to see the end of last year's temporary payroll tax cuts. That would be a 2% increase in tax for all workers. The end of certain tax breaks for businesses. The shifts in the alternative minimum tax that'll take a larger bite out of most of our taxes. The end of the tax cuts from 2001 to 2003. And the beginning of the taxes relating to President Obama's health care law. And the spending cuts, and this is sort of the big part of this, right? As part of the debt ceiling deal of 2011, are going to go into effect, and there will be deep automatic cuts in over 1,000 government programs, including the defense budget and Medicare. And defense, deep cuts, right? Deep cuts. That just means people losing jobs. And when people lose jobs, right, that's what that means. People are going to lose their jobs. And when they lose their jobs, they lose their ability to make mortgage payments, right? More people's homes will go into foreclosure. They lose their ability to buy stuff. It's very dramatic. And the choices that that U.S. lawmakers face, none of them are attractive, right? None of them are really good. And this is the problem. This is why it's a conundrum. This is why nothing has happened and why it should be so deeply scary to all of us. Because who wins the election isn't going to change this, right? So what are the three options? You can let the current policy that's scheduled for 2013 go into effect, right? There will be tax increases and spending cuts. It will weigh heavily on growth, probably drive the economy back into a deep recession, but the deficit as a percentage of GDP would be cut in half, so there's a plus there. You can cancel some or all of your scheduled tax increases and spending cuts. That would add to the deficit and increase the odds that the U.S. will face a situation like in Europe, so that's not so good. And, of course, maybe the U.S. debt will continue to grow. People won't like that. Or you could kind of take a middle course, opting for something that would address budget issues but have a more modest impact on growth. Those are your choices. I suppose you could just let it ride. You could just say, we're not going to deal with this for yet another year. We're just going to kind of, the economy's in really bad shape, and we're just going to kind of ignore the fact that we're supposed to do something on this, and we're just going to kind of push it down the road. We're just going to take that 3 that's in 2013, and we're going to make it a 4 for 2014, and that's how we're going to deal with it. So you could do that, and all you've done is kick the can. So how does this help you? It doesn't help you. It doesn't help you, and you have to understand that the economy is so bad right now that the Federal Reserve has said we're just going to spend $85 billion a month in the QE3, quantitative easing, third version, long term. And by the way, we don't see mortgage interest rates moving up until 2015. That is over two years from now. 2 years. We're in a hole. We're in a big hole, and we're heading into recession, and you've got to get ready. You've got to get prepared. You've got to save money. You've got to have a plan in place in case you lose your job. These are government jobs that would be lost. These are teachers and firefighters and policemen and women, police people. It's really scary. It's scary to think that we could have another million people unemployed. And we have just now, I think in this month, gotten to the place where more people are employed in the economy since just before President Obama took office. That's how far we've started to come back. We haven't gotten all the jobs back, but at least there is a, and those, a lot of people who are unemployed are still unemployed, but new people have come in and gotten jobs. They don't pay the same, but we're starting to see the beginning of employment start to get there. Nowhere near where we have to be. But you've got to get ready just in case. Now, there was a really interesting article in the New York Times today about how, you know, what Ben Bernanke, Federal Reserve Chairman, is really trying to do is to get you to, like, throw money to the wind. Throw caution to the wind. Just go out and spend a little bit. That isn't going to get us anywhere close to where we need to be. We need government to be invested. We need businesses to be invested. We need the world to be invested. It's a very tough place, and you've got to protect your flank. Because what we saw in the last recession in 08 and 09 is how unprepared most of us are. And how the slightest bump of the road can send people into a tizzy. And I don't want that for you. I want you to be in a place where you feel safe and secure and you can spend reasonably. But you're not going to be risking your house if something bad happens. So you've got to plan. You've got to start networking. You've got to build up your resources. You've got to understand how your personal finances are going to work in case the worst happens. And that's because it might happen. And I'm scared about that. I continue to say, I'm not trying to be a nervous Nelly, and I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer. All I'm trying to do is say we have serious challenges here. And being focused on the presidential election, which is fine. It's a good thing to get involved in what's happening in the election. But what really is going on behind the scenes is so much more, because I don't think either candidate has this particular answer in hand. And if they have, neither of them have said how we're going to deal with it. And that's unacceptable. There's too much riding on this for all of us. I don't know. I just don't have enough faith in me to say, okay, well, just because you say you can do it without telling me anything specifically, I'm going to go with that. I want to know more. We should demand more answers, more accountability, so that we understand what we're really going to face January 1st of 2013. Because right now, the way it looks, the fiscal cliff, it is pretty darn steep. Our number today, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We are taking questions about real estate, as always. Mortgages, there was a lot of other kinds of news to talk about. Definitely going to get there as well. Leaving it wide open. Lines are wide open. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment on AM 750. And now 95.5 FM, News Talk, WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Don't forget to check out my website, thinkglink.com, 404-872-0750. We're going to get to more of your questions in just a moment. Right now, we have Real Estate Insights sponsored by Duffy Realty of Atlanta. Rhonda Duffy back with us today. Hey, Rhonda, how's it going?
It's going great.
I'm glad to hear it. So sellers today are a little confused about how to price their homes, and I think one of the things they don't seem to understand much is how buyers search for homes on the internet by price. What's your take on that?
Well, the internet is set up with either pull-down menus, which you can verify for yourself, pull-down menus, or the buyer types in a number. Sellers are making critical mistakes because they're actually listening to their agent, who hasn't thought this process out, and they're listing their house at $199.9, $249.9, because I think they're thinking that the price sounds better.
Sure,
right?
I mean, gas at $9.99 a
right,
gallon,
much
or whatever
better.
It is.
But not for housing, because this is about getting the most searches, the most eyes. So if you price your house at $199.9, you're getting $150 to $200. If you price it at $200, which would be the same, $150 to $200, you would also get $200 to $250.
So people don't understand that there's this kind of larger range of $25,000 or $50,000. You want to span as many of those ranges as possible.
Correct. Placement on the internet is the most important thing.
All right. So your advice is instead of pricing at $199, where would you price it?
$200.
Okay. So you wouldn't go $2015?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
$200 straight up.
Straight up. So you're just trying to get that.
Right.
That seems to be a critical point that sellers miss.
Well, go out and check for yourself. It absolutely is.
And you think people should monitor their own listings, don't you?
Absolutely. They're the ones with the outcome, right? They're the ones who need the property sold, and they're the ones expecting to make money in their pocket from profit or equity. So they've got to be sure. Well, let me ask you, do you think there would be any seller that I could ask, hey, would you mind missing half the buyers?
Yeah, I think they'd all want that.
Right,
especially
exactly.
In this market, right?
Exactly. So they've got to use their own common sense and also what they're seeing because they're also searching on the internet.
Perfect. So you've got a blog today on this, don't you?
I do, RhondaDuffy.com.
All right, perfect. Thanks so much, Rhonda Duffy. Duffy Realty of Atlanta. Go to RhondaDuffy.com to check out her blog. I'm Elise Glink. When we come back, we're going to take more of your questions on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back to the Elise Glink Show. Live on Sundays, 12 to 2 during football season, which it is right now. Glad to have you on board. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I forgot to say follow me on Twitter because I'm already tweeting, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Folks are starting to retweet my what is your plan for dealing with the fiscal cliff, hashtag fiscal cliff, which is really fun to watch. So you can join that conversation, which is always going on online, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, and join the Think Glink community. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to the phones. Debbie joins us on the line from Dawson. Hey, Debbie, what's going on in your world today?
Hey, I just had a question. I wondered if you could tell me if it would be the right time to go from 4.78 on a 30-year to 3% on a 15. Or should I wait to see if the market goes down lower because it's going to be till 2015 that they keep the rates low?
So when you say that, it makes me wonder how low do you think interest rates can go?
Well, I wondered that myself, but I was thinking maybe there's a little more play there, and but then my question too was, while I wait to see, I would be losing every month by not refinancing now.
Bingo.
Okay.
I love it when people answer their own questions, but let's pull back a second and just look at this larger issue of how low interest rates can go. So banks go to the Fed discount window and they borrow money at virtually 0%. They turn around and they lend you money on a mortgage and their margin, which is the margin of profit, right?
Uh-huh.
Easiest to think about that, right? Is usually 2.75 to 3%. Okay?
Oh,
so
okay.
If they're borrowing at zero and you know they have to add 2.75% and you know that you can get a 10-year loan at 2.75%, how much lower can interest rates go?
Correct.
Zero. Right. So when you say I can get a 3% on a 15-year and should I wait to see if it goes down, it can only go down so fractionally at this moment, maybe to 2.875. The difference of that 0.1875 is so small that it's irrelevant, and yet you're paying 4.78%, which, by the way, is a historically unbelievably amazing rate, and you're paying that every month as opposed to getting this loan paid down. So there is no reason that you should wait five more minutes. Well, you will have to wait till tomorrow because
I know.
I don't think anybody's open right now. But you're all fired up. So what you should do right today, because you're going to get off this call and go, I want to do something right now. You should start searching online for some of the better deals. And I would encourage you to look at a big bank like Chase or Bank of America or Citi. I would encourage you to look at the rates of local credit unions, at local regional banks. You could look at a BB&T and start to understand what they're offering online. Do you know what your own credit history is and credit score and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I checked. It was like 815.
That's awesome. So you will have more opportunities than most. And this is a great time. I wouldn't wait a moment. And frankly, I'm at a place where I'm at like 3.25 for a 15-year.
Mm-hmm.
Three, maybe a little bit less than that. And our lender called us and he said, you know, I think I could get you 2.75 on a 15-year with like minimal closing costs and blah, blah, blah. And I just said, the savings is about $15 a month. The annoyance factor is far greater.
Yeah. I agree. I couldn't find 2.75. I checked almost every bank that I could think of.
Georgia is different than Illinois, right?
Yeah.
Every state is different. Every community is a little bit different. You know, who you are and the amount of equity you have in your property. I have like 75-80% equity right now.
That's, yeah, I do too.
It, right. So it just depends. Sometimes it's how much you're borrowing. It's just, you know, but still, 3% shouldn't wait.
No, like, I know. I've decided not to wait on this anymore. It's getting too nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I mean, just go ahead. I mean, you know and I know instinctively that the time to move is when everybody else is inactive. Right? The time to buy stocks was 2008. We only see that now in hindsight.
Right.
Here we are, everything is slowing down in front of this presidential election and the fiscal cliff, and everybody's really nervous. It's time to move. It's time to buy property. It's time to finance your house. Go for it. The worst thing that happens is that in 6 months, your lender calls you back and says, oh, now you qualify for 2.75%, and I can do it for you for $1,000. You'll pay that off in 6 months, and you'll say, okay, let's do it again. That's
right.
The worst thing that's going to happen.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. Go forth and refinance. 41 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Alex, what's going on in your world today?
Hi. I'm just starting to save up for a house. I'm really early on into the process. I'm living in an apartment with a roommate now. And other than just socking away every free cent that I can for a down payment, I wanted to see if there were any other first steps that I should be doing.
So the first thing I would say to you is, what's your credit history and credit score like?
Credit score is fairly high, but partially because I really don't have much credit history. What few things I've put on credit cards, I always pay off, and I really don't have a terrible lot of credit.
So not having a lot of credit, but having a high credit score is probably a good thing. I mean, when you say credit, you're not confusing the amount of available credit with the actual debt you're carrying, right?
Oh, no. Yeah, I have zero credit card debt, but I also don't have a high level of credit.
Good.
I don't have a high level of available credit.
Right. So you might want to work on that a little bit, just as an aside, right? If you get a good credit card deal that isn't going to cost you anything, you might just want to get one of those and once or twice a year, charge on it and pay it off. But that's a separate issue. So you want to buy a house. You're ready. Are you ready to make this investment? Are you ready to plunk down some money and then live there for the next 5 to 7 years? Because that is really the crucial thing. Understanding that whatever you buy, it really is not going to be an immediate flip situation. You got to make a commitment.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I've really gotten settled into saving for a house, is because I'm settled into a job that I'm confident I'm going to be in, if not in the exact same company, I'm at least going to be in the same city doing about the same thing. And I'm really happy in the locale that I'm in, and I'm just ready to go from renting to owning.
So I love this because, you're single right now?
Yes.
So I love this because you're ready to make this kind of ultimate commitment and you're not afraid of it. Are you thinking about living in the same kind of place that you're living now, like a condo? Or are you thinking about house, lawn,
I'm thinking about something like a small starter house, you know, about maybe like the 150,000 range. Just something small, but something that's my own.
So I got to say, in Georgia and Atlanta particularly right now, 150,000 buys a whole lot more than a starter house.
Mm-hmm.
It used to buy a starter house in a great neighborhood. It buys something slightly bigger than that now, which is actually a really good thing for you. How old are you, may I ask?
I'm 29.
So here's what I want you to really think about. Most people miss this. The average age of a first-time buyer, about 32, so you're a little bit ahead of the curve. But what I have noticed in my years of doing research on this and talking to people in all the books that I've written about buying a house, which you should certainly avail yourself of, is that when you're 29, there's like this 5 to 7 year cycle that if you want to get married and have kids, that's probably going to happen for you. And after that, the next 5 to 7 years, there are these cycles that we go through in our lives. It kind of makes you think about when your parents said, oh, you're just going through a phase. And you're like, no, I'm not. I'm not going through a phase, Mom. This is who I am. But really, you were going through a phase, like the angst of teenage years. But this 5 to 7 year period is pretty important. So when you buy a house, what I want you to think about is where you want to be in 5 to 7 years. Because where you want to be is going to dictate where you buy that house, what you buy, how big a house, what condition it's in, and what kind of money do you need to save for all the other things that are going to happen to you in 5 to 7 years. So you may want to buy this $150,000 house, the small starter house, as you say, and I'm saying to you, make it something that you might want to live in 7 to 10 years. Make it something that's going to accommodate whatever lifestyle changes are going to come to you in the next 5 to 7 years, because that is the big mistake first-time homebuyers make. And I detail it in my book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask, and in my new book, Buy Close, Move In. That mistake of not understanding we have these time horizons that are kind of built into our brain, I don't want you to make that mistake. I don't want you to call me back in 3 years going, you know, I bought this house, but now I'm engaged, and we want to have a kid, and it's not the right school district, and it's not the right this, and it's not near church, and it's not near family, and I got to sell. And I'm going to say to you, Alex, 3 years, not the right horizon. So promise me you're going to think about all of this before you decide where to buy.
Absolutely.
All right. That's what you need to think about. That was your question to me. What else do I have to think about? That's your homework. Start mapping it out. And it may not be, you know, marriage and a kid in 5 to 7 years. I'm just saying that what I have noticed in my 20-plus years of doing this is that if that's on your horizon, it's probably going to happen. So don't have it be one of those unexpected surprises that then you have to account for later, because those are the ones that cost you big time. Those are the ones that become so expensive, they set you back 10, 15 years from your financial horizon. And I want to make sure you do it right the first time.
All right. Thank you very much, Elise. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good luck. Let me know what happens. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. Big mistakes first-time homebuyers make. I have written about this so many times. You can go to my website, thinklink.com, and you can click on Mistakes Homebuyers Make, and it will pop up a whole bunch of different stories that have lists that talk about this. And it's, again, you can get my book on Amazon for less than $10, I think. 100 questions every first-time homebuyer should ask. Buy Close, Move In. You can buy the two together. I think it's nearly free. Anyway, go there and check it out. If you are a first-time homebuyer, I want you to buy a house, but I really want you to buy the right house, the one that's going to work for the next phase of your life, next 7 to 10 years. All right, 404-872-0750. Sandra joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Sandra.
Hey, how are you?
I am great. What's going on?
Oh, I'm so glad I got you on the phone. First of all, I love listening to you. You're just so sweet and so nice.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad that you're listening to me.
Yes, ma'am, and I try to make it quick. I'm sure you got a ton of other callers trying to get in here. I've been trying to sell my house since January. It's not selling, which is fine. You know.
Well, it's not fine. You want to move on with your life. Why isn't it selling?
I have no idea.
Well,
it seems like
price?
It's always something. I mean, I'm in Walton District. It's a top house. I've lowered the price. I've remodeled the house. I mean, and then, frankly, the last thing was the agent was saying, well, the person in front of you, they don't like to cut their yard. Finally, I got them to cut their yard. So I don't know what else can be wrong with it. But
well, let's take a step back and examine this a minute, because I think that you must be missing sort of a crucial piece. You said you've lowered your price.
Yep.
Either there are no buyers coming to your community.
Over 150 showings.
You've had 150 showings and you haven't sold your house yet?
Correct.
So that tells me a couple of things. Number one, you're pricing it in the ballpark. But
yep.
Number two, there must be something going on in your community that people are making other decisions. Are they buying other houses?
Yep.
In the community?
Yep.
Foreclosures?
Nope.
And what are the price points?
From 335 to 420.
And where are you?
I was at 379. I dropped it down to 369.
So you're right in that ballpark.
Yes, ma'am.
Is the problem your agent?
Well, if she's listening, yeah, it must be. I don't know.
You don't know if the problem's the agent?
Well,
you're getting so many showings. What is the feedback from the buyers?
Well, man, it goes from, oh, I don't want to cut the yard. Well, then, why are you looking at a house with a yard? Oh, I'm looking for a newer house. Well, it's listed as a 1979 house. Hello? I mean, I just don't. I get them from all angles. It's incredible.
So what? But the broker should be going back to the other buyer's agents and saying, why didn't he buy this house? Just off the record, why didn't he buy this house? Why didn't she buy this house? Why didn't they make an offer? Why did they make an offer on these other houses? What is your agent telling you?
She is telling me that these buyers come back, and first it was paint color. So I painted the house. Then it was, well, the yard, the grass isn't completely filled in. Well, the grass is blooming. It's looking beautiful. Then it was my neighbors across the street. They don't cut their yard. Now I got them to cut their yard. It just seems like there's always something.
All right. So we need to take a short break. Can you hang with me until we come back from break? And we'll examine this a little further, because I think we're missing sort of the big picture. And I want to focus on big picture. Can you hang on?
Yes, ma'am. I'd love to.
All right. You stand by. 51 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glenk. Stand by. We'll talk to Sandra a little bit more about his home sale issue. Coming up next on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglenk.com. And find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750. And now 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
It's 56 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glenk Show. 404-872-0750 is our number. We've been talking with Sander, who's been trying to sell his house since January. It's priced right in the middle of homes he says are selling between $335,000 and $420,000. He's at $369,000, so he's right in the middle. He's been apparently paying attention to the feedback he's given and that the house hasn't sold. So, Sander, here's a question that I have for you.
Okay.
This has to be incredibly frustrating for you.
Incredible.
Incredible. How is this kind of frustration affecting your life? How are you holding up through it? Because I think that the larger issue for so many people who are in the exact same situation, which is that they're doing everything right, everything they're supposed to do, and the house still isn't selling, and yet you see other houses in the neighborhood selling. I mean, how is that affecting how you're dealing with this?
Oh, I'm telling you, if it wasn't for the strong character that I have and the faith on believing that, you know, a higher power has my best interest in hand, I mean, I would have already cracked up, because, I mean, I go around the neighborhood, excuse me, and I see homes turning over left and right, and I'm thinking to myself, this is insane. I mean, I have a full... And some of the houses that are sold don't even have the amenities that I have. I mean, I got a full basement that I finished, a granite countertop. I mean, I have put in so much, and then my life is on hold because I'm ready to move on, and I'm ready to move on with my life, and it's on hold.
So the market is telling you, and you're not going to like this one bit, the market is telling you you're not priced right for the perceived value of what you have. So you think you've priced your house in the middle. It sounds like it's right. You have two problems. One is this perception problem that your house isn't worth $369,000. And the second is that your agent isn't finding the right buyers to bring through the door and must not be getting the right feedback. The true story from these buyers who are buying everywhere else. And so what you need to do is you need to go around to every other house that's on the market and see what is happening. Talk to those sellers, talk to those agents, and understand what you're missing. Because I'm telling you, You're missing something big. And when it clicks for you, your house is going to sell. And I could say to you all day long, it's a numbers game, but you've got 150 showings. You need to get the right showings. And until you do, the frustration level is going to be extreme. And I don't want you to crack under pressure. Let me know next week what happens. 404-872-0750. 59 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise. We'll be back in a moment.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 12 to 2 here on News Talk WSB. Our phone number 404-872-0750, or I will happily pay for the call. Well, actually, I won't, but our boss will. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online, if you're not following me on Twitter, you're missing great conversation already, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Jacob tweeted that he's loving the Beatles music on today's show. Unfortunately, that was last hour. You'll have to stay tuned to find out which artists we're featuring this hour. But it's just been that music thing. We get a steady stream of tweets every week about what we're playing and what people like listening to. So I am happy to crowdsource that. If you've got opinions on what our music should be next week, tweet it out. We'll see if we pick it up. Andrew will be paying attention, I promise. Andrew's running our board. And don't forget to go online, thinkglink.com. Let's see. I think what we're going to do is we're going to go get some phone calls in. How about that? Tony joins us on the line from Gwinnett. So, Tony, you are worrying about closing costs? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I've got a house that Zillow says is worth about $130,000. I only owe $70,000. They said I had pristine credit, and that's a 3% interest rate.
Who is telling you all this? Zillow is telling you this?
No. Zillow, I'm just telling you what the appraise.
Okay, you know that's a guesstimate, right?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And they're actually, I just paid $450 to the bank so that they could have it appraised.
Okay.
So they're having it appraised, and like I said, I'm only, it's probably about $80,000 is I'm going to refi. I only owe $70,000, but they said 3% interest rate. But after everything was said and done, it was like $4,800 in points and closing. And when I questioned it, they looked at me like a dog hearing a strange noise. Like, you know, we got to make a living type thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. That old we need to make. I'm bleeding for the banks and the living they're making right now. What about you?
Yeah, no doubt. And like I said, I figure since I have such good credit, you know, I like to wear that badge around to different banks. You know, if they want my business, then, you know, you got to rock and roll. But so, is $4,800 a little bit much? Because I know it's not much for a bank to loan either, from what I understand.
All right, Tony, let's just take a step back for a moment. Tell me about the process you went through to get to this bank. Because you've got to take your keys out of the car.
I got you.
I'm a little concerned. Actually, I'm really concerned about the process that led you to this point for you to pick up the phone and ask me if $4,800 is too much money. Because you're telling me the way that you're describing this process has me very, very concerned. So what did you do? How did you get to this bank?
Well, I actually banked there. And I actually have several banks I bank at because I live in a couple of different places. And some people that I had talked to that were in the business, you know, you always go to your friends. They're telling me, you know, $70,000. That's just not. Then the people don't really want to touch not a whole lot of money, you know, for to refi and all that. And they looked at me. You know, if you had $500,000, well, then you got our attention.
Are these bankers that you're talking to?
No, these were friends. This is why I went to my bank.
So then you just went to this one bank. Did you shop around?
Well, you know, actually I did to start with, and like I said, I didn't get much response because of the size of the loan, but yeah.
No. I got to jump in. Tony, listen to me.
Okay, sure.
I got to jump in and tell you that you've made a big mistake. So far it's only cost you $450.
Okay.
But it's about to cost you $4,800.
Uh-huh.
Okay. $70,000 is a fine amount of money to refinance. You are trying to do a cash out refinance for 80. You owe 70 and you're trying to get an extra 10. Why do you need that money?
Actually, they were going to roll the $4,800 into the loan.
Oh, good. So you can pay interest on your charges.
Correct.
And, nice. And, nice. They're hurting this bank.
I was going to take the $3,000 to $5,000 and have the exterior painted and that type of thing.
Do you have cash that you can use to do that with?
Yes.
Why would you borrow money for that?
Hang on to the cash. Cash is king right now, I guess. Let the banks pay for it.
You're not letting the bank pay for it. You're paying for it.
Yeah.
$4,800 plus interest on the $4,800. You're paying for it.
Let me ask you this. On the $450 on the appraisal, can I use that same appraisal at a different bank?
No. No, you can't. This is what I'm saying to you. You called about... So let's back up a little bit. You said you shopped around and you went to different places and you've ended up where you bank. This is what banks are counting on. They're counting on folks like you just going to the place where they have a checking account and piling on other accounts for them. That's the most profit that they can make. And to reward you, they are way overcharging you in closing costs and fees. That is your reward for going to the place where they should value your business and they don't.
Should I get a money tree or something where they find out who, all the loan people come in? I mean, I really don't know where to go. I mean, I'm at the mercy. Of course you're going to start with your friends and family who's in the business.
I understand. But I want you to shop around. I wanted you to talk to a credit union and a regional bank and a couple of other kinds of places and maybe a mortgage broker and 5 or 6 or 7 places. When somebody comes to you and says you're borrowing $70,000 and we're going to charge you nearly $5,000 for that, plus the $450, they're telling you they don't want your business.
The $450 was part of it. They said they'd credit me back once I did the loan. Now, here's another thing is I got higher interest rates with lower points in closing around when I did shop.
We just had somebody call in. Are you getting a 30-year loan? Or 15?
No, 15-year.
Okay, and so earlier in the show, we had somebody call in and got offered a 3% loan, 15-year, with a fraction of what you're being offered.
I know, that's why I'm talking to you.
So what is that telling you?
I don't know where to go, though. That's
you have to keep calling around. You have to do some homework, and I don't think you've done that.
Okay.
I mean, I think you're great, and I love your energy and enthusiasm, but you're about to get taken for $5,000.
Okay, well, I tell you, on the $450, I'll just call it,
Lesson learned.
Lesson learned. And at least it'll satisfy my curiosity also what it's worth. So then we can go to and shop around.
I'd rather
at least $450 than $4,800.
Yeah, I mean, I'd much rather you not spend $4,800 on this, really. And if you've got the cash in the bank to paint your house, do not pay the bank the money to have this extra $10,000. Don't do that because that's also probably pushing up some costs. No banks want to do cash out refinances and they make you pay through the nose for it. Not that they'll tell you that. So go redo the, and I don't know who your friends are that you're asking, but nobody needs to have if you have $500,000 in loans, you're not even in conventional territory anymore. You're a jumbo. So your friends who are advising you don't know anything.
Okay.
Don't listen to them. Please.
I won't.
Good. Go do your research. Okay. Go figure out who's going to actually lend you money. And let me just say that $4,800 for a $70,000 loan, today's market, is completely insane. 404-872-0750 on the Elise Klink Show. Let's continue on with our calls. Clay joins us on the line from Duluth. Hey, Clay, what's going on with your bathroom?
Not much. It says I'm in the process of renovating it. It says I've gutted it and so forth. It says, and want to refinance. My question is, it says, will the renovation, if it's still in process, hurt the appraisal fee, or should I just wait until I get the bathroom completely redone?
How long is it going to take you to get your bathroom redone? I mean, my sister, I just was visiting her with her in New York this week. I got home yesterday,
ma'am.
And her bathroom that she started like 3 months ago is still being renovated. It's driving her up the wall. She's so frustrated with her contractors. Is that kind of where you are? You're like in the never-ending bathroom refinance?
I would say yes. Well, the thing is, I had several things going on. I just redid the hardwood floors down. It says, so I kind of tackled two tasks at one time, and I was just curious. Like, somebody said that it says if I go to refinance, they would consider it a one bath instead of a two bath because one bath was not operational. Is that so or not really?
You know what? I think that appraisers can do all sorts of crazy things, and if it looks like you're not nearly done with your bathroom, they might say, that bath's never going to be finished. So why would you even do something that would leave a little corner of question
right
in their mind? You just wait until you're done. But a bathroom remodel shouldn't take, you know, more than about 4 to 6 weeks if it's planned well.
Right, right.
So how far in it are you?
Well, it's as I'm at the starting phase, really. It's as I've only gutted it. I haven't done anything else with it yet.
So right now an appraiser might come in and say, looks like it'll be a great closet.
Right.
Right? They don't know.
Right.
So
right.
Here's what you do. Get your plan finished. If you get a toilet in there and the shower, even if the grout isn't done, even if the finish work isn't done,
right,
you know, if you're close enough to see it's a bathroom and not a closet,
correct,
I think you'll probably be fine. Because then they're going to go, oh, you're just a week or two away from the finish work. But why even wait? If it's a week or two away, just get the whole thing done, and they're going to come in and go, wow,
right,
spanking new bathroom, gorgeous. Can I use it?
Right.
That's what they're going to say.
So, all right.
So you want to just get it done, and then the frustration of wondering whether or not it's going to be done in time for the appraisal, you won't have that. You're going to take the pressure lid off. And trust me, mortgage interest rates aren't going anywhere till like 2015. So if you wait another 3-4 weeks, get this bathroom thing done, you're going to be fine.
All right.
Okay?
Thanks again for taking my call.
Hey, anytime, Clay. Thanks for calling. 18 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. You know, it's funny with Clay and the bathroom remodel. I get this question quite a lot because people don't seem to understand how it works when you have the appraiser comes and you're in a various stage of house undress, shall we call it, right? The naked house, right? You're just in the middle of, like, gutting it. Everything's been taken out, and it's hard to tell what these rooms are supposed to be. Now, if you're building a new house, right, it's easier because they see plans and they see you working along the way. It all holds together. But when you're remodeling, if they can't tell what a room is, it's not that they're supposed to not ask you and not supposed to know, but maybe it just doesn't get translated to the paper in the right way, and so then you end up fighting a bad appraisal or a misconstrued appraisal, and you have to protest, and it's just a lot of work. It's much easier to just wait at least another, I don't know, what are we talking about, 3-4 weeks? Like, if your contractor can't get your bathroom done in 3 to 4 weeks, you have bigger problems than whether or not the appraiser is going to come in okay. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. 20 minutes past the hour, I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We have a great weekend prize pack for you coming up next here on AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
25 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. It's time for our weekly prize pack, the WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack value this week, $367. Great prize pack. It includes a pair of tickets to the Gas South Broadway series presentation of Chicago. What an amazing musical that is. October 4th at the Cobb Energy Center. And a pair of tickets to the 11th annual Taste of Atlanta, October 7th at Tech Square in Midtown Atlanta. Yum. A Kroger $50 gift card and a pair of tickets to see Rush in concert on November 1st at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater produced by ASO Presents. All of those, all of that together, $367. We are going to give it to you, the fifth caller at our prize pack line, 404-741-0750. Be nice to Shannon. She's the one who's going to take your call today. 26 minutes past the hour. Let's see if we can take a quick call before we go back. Steve joins us on the line from Johns Creek. Hey, Steve.
Hello, Elise.
What's going on?
How are you? I wanted to ask you, what do you think is going to happen to property values in Florida? I have a condo in Florida that I've owned for many years, and I didn't know if it was time to sell it or just hang on until values climb back up.
Where in Florida is it? You know, it depends.
It's in Ormond Beach. It's right on the beach, just north of Daytona.
Daytona was hit pretty hard, I got to say. Are you thinking about selling this property?
We were thinking about it. We've been renting it out for the past few years.
Okay, you've owned it for how long?
About 15 years.
So you're pretty well in the cash, I would think, at this moment, right?
Oh, yeah. We bought it when it was pretty cheap.
Then you shouldn't worry, because whether property prices go up a little bit or go down a little bit, I mean, it might take 15, 20 years to get back where you thought your value was in 2005. So
right.
If I said to you, Steve, it's going to be 20 years till anything really big changes in a positive way, what are you going to say to me about selling?
I would probably hang on to it unless it looked like the property values were going to start falling again.
All I can tell you is a recession won't be good for it. And you know, if you've been listening to the show, that I think recession is coming. And it's coming in a way that I think is going to be either more damaging or less damaging, but I think it's coming. The hope is that it would be a shorter recession, much the way that 1937 was shorter, although an extended recovery period, right, all the way up to World War II, versus the first much more devastating depression. So I think you have to decide whether you're staying or going. And if you don't mind hanging on for 20 years, I think you're going to be fine no matter what happens. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more in just a moment on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, and congratulations to Lenitra, who won our prize pack, awesome prize pack. 404-872-0750 is the phone number on the Elise Glink Show, where you can call in, and we will chat about money. And if you're not following me on Twitter, it's at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. I've just tweeted out the link for the Equifax Finance blog, Money Matters Contest. I want you to make a video. Just turn on your phone. Everybody has a phone that does video. Turn it on, point it at yourself, and give me three tips, three things you do to save money every single day, and how you make that work. Share that wealth with us. Upload it to the Equifax Finance blog. And if we pick your video, you could win $1,000. It is very little work for a very big chance to win huge money, really huge money. $1,000 prize, the Equifax Finance blog, Money Matters Contest. Follow me on Twitter. Get all the rules and details at Equifax.com. 404-872-0750. I want to go back and get some calls in, I think. Connie joins us on the line from Cedartown. So, Connie, you've been listening to our discussion about closing costs?
Yes, and I have several pieces of investment property, rental houses, and some of them recently, in the last 6 months or so, have qualified for the HARP refinance programs.
Mm-hmm.
The interest rate is great. I mean, I'm taking my interest rate on investment property from a little over 6 down to a little over 4.
Nice.
But the closing costs, every time, Chase is the one that seems to be, I don't know if I'm supposed to say that on the radio, but Chase.
Too late now.
It's too late now, right. It's the one that seems to really be sticking it to me after I heard your call earlier. I mean, I'm doing a HARP with them on about a $90,000 house. And every time I get another good faith estimate, which I get one every few weeks, it's been a long, drawn-out process, they've upped my closing costs. And we're up to about $8,000 worth of closing costs.
So,
and I feel stuck because it's a HARP. Do I have any room to argue, or do I just have to eat it?
Well, okay. Let's not confuse things, because you're a little bit confused,
okay.
And I understand you're stuck. First of all, you have to separate out investment real estate,
mm-hmm.
and owner-occupied real estate.
Yes.
There's just a whole different set of rules for investment real estate.
Yes.
Now you have to separate out HARP refinancings and conventional refinancings. And you, Connie, are on the losing side of both of those equations, I'm sorry to say.
Okay.
Because
so I'm going to look at it that I'm getting a great interest rate, but it's going to cost me initially a good bit.
Yeah, I mean, what you have to do is step back and say to yourself, if I have to pay $8,000, am I going to save enough money going from 6% to 4%? And how long am I going to keep these properties? And what am I actually doing about that? Uh-huh. You have to look always in the larger context so that you understand what it is you should be doing. And you can't, the mistake that people make, that you're making right now, is to listen to the show and say, oh, there, she says $4,800 is too much for closing costs on a $70,000 loan, so why am I paying $8,000? And the mistake is only because you have directly applied the advice, but without thinking about what it is you're trying to do.
Okay.
So
I think I'll still end up doing it because actually I'm dropping the interest rate about 2.5%, and actually I'm almost able to cut the number of years on the financing almost in half.
Well, so that's kind of amazing. Are you going to keep the property for 15 years?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's my retirement, and I'm still in my 40s, so. Yeah, I'll have it 15 years.
So here's the thing. What you need to do, always, before you make an investment decision, because if you listen to the show every week, you know that I am all about investing with intention.
Uh-huh.
Right? I don't want you to just kind of be haphazard. I don't want you to throw caution to the wind and just dive in. I want you to know where you're going.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're getting these offers from HARP because the government is paying lenders or making them step up.
Uh-huh.
So you're getting this offer. It's going to cost you $8,000, but you're going to save how much every month? One property. How much are you going to save?
What I am doing, rather than taking the monthly savings, is I'm reducing my mortgages. Let's say if I had a 30-year mortgage on the property, I can pay $75 more a month and take that mortgage down to a 15-year.
I got
it. I'm cutting my number of years that I'm paying on it almost in half.
Okay, but that's not the question I'm asking you. The reason I'm asking you how much would you save is because you have to understand that if you're going to pay $8,000 for the privilege of refinance, how long a period of time is it going to take you to pay that back with your savings?
Oh, okay. I've looked at that. It's a little over 4 years.
So 4 years is a lot longer than I would normally say is worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
I would say to you, you're better off taking the $8,000, making a one-time prepayment onto the loan, and being done with it. And then the net effect might be the same. But because you're going to keep these houses for 15 more years, and your goal is to have it cash-free at that point, the real calculation you should be doing, and the math is harder, is if you make this one-time $8,000 prepayment, what does that get you in terms of years saved?
Okay.
And is that a better deal than refinancing to a 15-year, paying $75 more a month, but knowing in 15 years you're completely done? The $8,000, based on however many years you've had this loan, might actually get you below 15 years. So
okay.
You have to decide how much money you're really saving,
and
what is the best deal for you.
Okay.
And those questions are questions that, unfortunately, I don't have the math or the time to be able to answer for you on here. You know, I don't have all your numbers. You have to do that homework. And understanding what the key question is for this kind of refinance is going to make all the difference, because there are so many times when I tell people, you have 17 or 20 years left on that loan, but if you took the $8,000 and you just applied it in a one-time prepayment, that might take you to a 13-year payoff. Well, if you can have a 13-year payoff and you're not paying an extra $75 a month, which is the better deal? It's not always about the interest rate. So go back to what I always say, which is for a home run refinance, yes, you want to lower the interest rate. Yes, you want to lower your monthly payment. Most importantly, you want to shorten your loan term. And the fourth thing, right, that gets you to home base, you want to manage your closing costs. Now, any one of those might be enough to get you over the line, but it may not be. So you got to look at the tougher, bigger issue, which is, where am I really saving the most money? Where am I really going to achieve the goal? And if I told you, Connie, that just by making that $8,000 prepayment, you could actually get over the finish line in 13 years, that's, for you, that's a home run. even if your interest rate stays at 6% and you cannot brag about it at the water cooler. You will have then hit a home run. So it's not just formulaic. There's actually some thinking that goes behind here. Let me know what you decide to do. 44 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's go back to our phone lines. Melissa joins us on the line. Hey, Melissa.
Hi, Liz. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on?
Earnest money.
Earnest money. Okay. Are you buying? Are you selling? What kind of earnest money?
I'm buying.
You're buying a house. Great. The first house?
Yes.
Okay. And are you going to make me pull the whole story out of you piece by piece, or are you just going to tell me?
No. Basically, I have given my my agent the earnest money.
How much money was it?
$3,000.
Okay.
And some change. She told me that after the offer came back approved, that's when my due diligence started. However, when I tried to get my earnest money back, they told me, no, that it wasn't, that it was the day that the realtor and I signed the papers, which is 10 days before.
So I'm really confused by what you just told me, because typically when you put earnest money down, you don't see that money again. It becomes part of the down payment. And at closing, you get credited for that. And you don't have to bring more. Maybe you bring a little more to the table or you don't. But that becomes typically part of your down payment. You don't get it back unless the deal falls apart. Did your deal fall apart?
What I wanted to do is pull out of the deal and be within my due diligence. She had emailed me telling me that my due diligence ended on the 26th. And that is when I sent her the response saying, no, I don't want to go through this deal. I want to keep looking for another house.
Why didn't you want to buy this house?
Because after the inspection, I found out that it had a lot more to do than I thought. And I was
It didn't approve inspection. When you provided the contract, was an inspection clause part of it?
It was 10 days to do my inspection, yes.
Yes, you got 10 days to do the inspection. Did you get the right to pull out of the deal if it failed inspection?
Yes.
Okay. And did it fail inspection?
For me, I didn't want to invest all that money on renewing all the electrical. No, I didn't want to go through all that.
Got it. So you decided to pull out, and you sent written notice to the agent in time?
Yes.
And what happened next?
She tells me that the papers were signed 10 days earlier, and that is when my due diligence started, not when she had told me, which is when the offer was accepted and signed by the other party.
That is not necessarily true. That is not what she told you is not necessarily true. Now, I don't know what your paperwork says.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, the clock starts ticking when they accept the offer.
Okay.
And when did all this happen?
Okay, they accepted the offer on the 16th. The offer was signed and accepted on the 16th.
And you sent a letter on the 26th?
Exactly.
Okay. So now you need a lawyer.
Yes.
No, now you're going to spend money on a lawyer because you put forth I actually think you've made some key mistakes here. One is that you hired an agent who doesn't really represent you.
Right.
And you hired somebody who's not all that smart. So you should go to the managing broker of that firm, and you should file a complaint, and you should talk to that broker about helping you fix the situation so that you can work with a different agent to buy a different house.
Okay.
That you have to do that tomorrow. And you really sound so unsure of yourself, Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
You sound like you really don't know what you're doing. And when you get like that, it feels to me like you don't have enough firepower. You don't have enough knowledge to make you a strong buyer. And so I'm listening to you tell this story, and you seem really unsure about the facts, unsure about what's happened. And it's like all you're doing is focusing on the $3,000. And what I don't know is, I don't know, first of all, whether you're entitled to it back. Because, again, I don't really know what your contract says, and you sound like you don't know what your contract says.
On the contract, I was assuming that what my agent was telling me was true, that the day they signed that accepted offer, that's when my due diligence started.
Did you read the contract? Did you read your contract that you signed?
Yes, and it says from the agreement date. And that agreement day was approved on the 16th, but the contract was written on the 10th.
Okay, you need.
The approval was on the 16th.
Right. So, did you call the managing broker? Did you call your agent and said, if you don't fix this, you're going to be in huge trouble?
I have told her that I want to pull out of it, and then she says that the other party says that the contract was signed on the 10th when I'm looking at it, and it says on the 16th. No, I have not called the broker, okay. But I will.
You have to step up here. If you want your $3,000 back, you're going to have to step up and get tough.
Okay.
I want to hear you sound like you're really tough. And you're going to have to say to this broker and call the managing broker and have a meeting tomorrow and say, there's $3,000 on the line here. And nobody in your shop is representing my interests. And your agent is giving bad advice. Now, I will tell you, Melissa, that your agent is not an attorney, and you should never take legal advice from people who are not attorneys. And that is a mistake that buyers make, and you've made that mistake.
Now, does it make a big difference if I have it in writing? She sent me an email saying that my due diligence ended on the 26th. Is that going to help me?
Yes, I would print that up and bring it with you. And say, this is what your agent told me, managing broker. What are you going to do about this? I want my $3,000 back. Are you a firm that I can do business with or not?
Right.
You have to step. Nobody else in this world is going to step up and support you. They're not going to, protect your flank. You've got to do it yourself. And you've got to protect yourself. And if you feel like you need an attorney to go in there and make sure they understand that they have a responsibility here, by all means, go find one tomorrow morning. But you have...
Where would I find one that will be in that line of business, like, right away?
Right. So tomorrow morning, you can call the Atlanta Bar Association, and you can ask for the head of the real estate committee. And when you get the real estate committee head, tell them what happened, and tell them you need an attorney who can help you go forth and conquer. And that's going to take you a couple of hours to locate. And in the meantime, I would call the managing broker and ask for a sit-down, face-to-face meeting with that person and your agent. I would gather all of your evidence, the contract, the email that she sent, anything else, and I would go in there as soon as you can and say, listen, there's something really wrong here, and I want this fixed, and I want my $3,000 back now. And you have to sell them and make sure they understand that you mean business. It's 52 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. Be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
57 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us today. Patty wants to know about Harper refinancing, right, Patty?
That's right, I do.
What do you want to know about that?
Well, thanks for taking the call. My question is, do I have to refinance using the HARP, using the bank?
I'm sorry, Patty, you're kind of breaking up, but I think your question is, do you actually have to go to your own lender to do a HARP refinance? And the answer is no, which you would know if you went to MakingHomeAffordable.gov. So the one mistake I keep hearing people make is that they are just not shopping this around. And you can shop around for a HARP refinance. It is absolutely acceptable to shop around for a HARP refinance, and I want you to go and do it because everybody's got a different stake in the game. Every lender has a different set of closing costs. It's almost incomprehensible. It boggles the mind, right? And yet, this is the reality of the mortgage market we're in. So go forth, shop around, price out those closing costs, figure out how much you're going to pay and how much you're going to save, and make sure that no matter what kind of a refinance you do, it's a home run for you. I'm Elise Glink. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to follow me on Twitter. Enter the Equifax Finance Blog Money Matters video contest. I want to see your entries all week. send me questions at thinklink.com. And whatever you do, be intentional about the investments that you make of time, of money, and of relationships. Take care, everybody. Have a great week.